Because illness and death and dying doesn't spare any household. I had spent many years in the corporate world and it was not satisfying me enough. And I really wanted to do something that I would feel personally good about. And that led me to, with the help of my mentor, Raghu Anant Narayan, who kind of helped me, you know, understand this for myself, I was able to say that how can I put my education and my life experience together and be able to then offer something that can be impactful, meaningful, purposeful, that can really help people at large.
This is episode number 5 of Keep Me Inspired podcast show with Bhavna Isar.
Hello guys, I'm Shivat Maj. I'm your host for this show. And every fortnightly, I will be interviewing today's most inspiring and successful personalities who will range from CEOs, authors, celebrities, YouTubers, and other achievers who have achieved unachievable paths and became most successful. And we both will learn together and deconstruct and understand what made them be wherever they are today. So stay tuned.
Bhavna Isar is a passionate person with diverse interests. She is the founder and CEO of a business consulting firm, Sambhavna, and a social venture, Caregiver Sati. Additionally, fellow and facilitator in process work with Sumedha's Academy for Human Contest. She is also first global ambassador of Global Moto Adventures, a platform that supports women motorcyclists to achieve their dreams. She is a visiting faculty of Indian Institute for Management, Ahmedabad. She is also a member of NTL and ISPSO. Her academic credentials include PG in Diploma, PM and IR, XLRI School of Business and Human Resources, Jamshedpur. She is Gestalt OD practitioner, iGold International Gestalt Organization and Leadership Development. Her story was featured in a book authored by best-selling author Rashmi Bansal titled Touch the Sky, the Inspiring Stories of Women Across India Who Are Changing Their Destiny. Bhavna's areas of interest include change, transitions, innovations, creative expression, group dynamics, transpersonal psychology, somatic and yoga. She is currently based in Mumbai with her husband, daughter, and enjoys traveling. Her hobby includes poetry, painting, crocheting, cooking, gardening, and motorcycle riding. Being a motorcycle rider, Bhavna, her hobby has helped her to discover herself by pushing the boundaries of mind, body, and soul, creating new possibilities, something she passionately lives by. So, to know more about her, grab your earphones or headphones and stay tuned.
Hello everyone, today we have with us Bhavna Isar. You might have heard her introduction in the starting of this podcast, but to summarize in short, she is the founder and CEO of a business consulting firm, Sambhavna, and a social venture, Caregiver Sati. Thank you so much, ma'am, for being
on the show. Thank you very much for having me here. It's my pleasure and an honor.
Ma'am, I just want to take you back to your childhood and want to know how all this started.
How Caregiver Sati started?
Your interest in Caregiver Sati and doing something social service kind of innovative startup.
So, you know, Shiva, I may have had something in my heart when I was younger, but I'm not sure if I was very clear that I want to do something for a social cause. I do think that when I was young, I was highly influenced by the environment around me, like everybody is. So, you know, our parents want us to do things and society wants some things and so on. And one is influenced by that. I was also influenced by that. I cannot say that I was very, very clear on what I want to do. In fact, in my graduation, I studied to be a coder or a software engineer. So I think I would have been very, very happy if I was, you know, I was behind a computer and doing coding. But it was also important to be financially independent, and it was important to have a certain quality of living. And therefore, I decided to go in for an MBA. Totally, it was just like you take exams, competitive exams, and everybody in my college was taking MBA exams, so even I took MBA. And I don't think I was very clear about what I want to do. So I'm not a very good example of someone who has planned her career. That said, I got into XLRI where I studied HR, and I got into an HR career for a very long time. My attitude was that I will make the most of what I have, and it's okay if I don't have a clear direction. I was quite young when I lost my father to a terminal illness, and I think it was not very clear to me that I want to do something in social work or that has social implications. But what was definitely clear over a period of time, over the years, as I was in various roles, it became clear to me that what gives me real happiness is if I did something that had long-lasting impact that would make a change in society. So that became clear to me only much later. And then I was also feeling the need to lead a life of purpose. And I wanted to do something for some people. I come from a family that had relocated at the time of partition. So we don't have an ancestral home. At least our ancestral home is not in India. So I couldn't do anything where I could go back to my village and say, okay, you know, I have this education and now I can go and make my village better. So I used to really wonder, what can I do? And then it struck me that I can do something in the cities that I'm a part of, and I can do something that I have a unique personal experience of. My experience that is personal is that not only have I been a caregiver myself, I have seen caregivers, I have been a caregiver to a caregiver. My mother was the primary caregiver to my father. And actually, I have seen a lot of caregiving in my family, like many of us have, actually, because illness and death and dying doesn't spare any household. I had spent many years in the corporate world, and it was not satisfying me enough. And I really wanted to do something that I would feel personally good about. And that led me to, with the help of my mentor, Raghu Anant Narayan, who kind of helped me, you know, understand this for myself, I was able to say that how can I put my education and my life experience together and be able to then offer something that can be impactful, meaningful, purposeful, that can really help people at large. So it is interesting that in XLRI, my college, the tagline is also for greater good. I wasn't very mindful of that when I was studying there. Mm-hmm. But now I feel quite proud because I do think that the kind of education that I got there helped me think and be sensitive and think about the greater good. Mm. So that's what brought me here. I also have to say that I feel sometimes it's not only satisfying to think of greater good. Sometimes you want to think of yourself. So I spent a lot of time thinking of myself also. So I find my joy through what I'm doing right now.
Like, did you, first itself, you didn't figure out everything, right, in the starting?
Not at all. So here's how it was. When I first started, like I told you, in my career, I wanted to be a software programmer. Then I went to do my MBA, which was in HR. I worked in HR for many years. And in HR, I used to like some parts of HR and I used to not like some parts of HR. And I worked across many companies and there are many times that I really enjoyed my work and there are many times it was quite difficult. And then one day, it was my father's birthday and I wanted to do something to remember him. And I said, I don't know what I want to do, but let me just start something. So I, you know, just put out a Facebook page in his memory. And I, you know, tried to do something around his illness. Now, he had this very rare neurological condition called multiple system atrophy. So I put out something there to say that we want to support people who are affected by this and people who are family members of the patient. That led to more thinking and more research, which led to thinking that actually caregivers across medical conditions are significantly impacted by the illness and the loss of their dear one. So there is a common thread, whether it is a neurological condition or it is cancer or it is mental health or it is aging, the family member also goes through significant trauma. So while the family member or the caregiver is there for the patient, who's there for the caregiver? In our society where there are now nuclear families and, you know, our community is not that strong, how can we support the caregiver? Maybe we now need an organization that thinks about the caregiver. And because that's my education and that's my work experience of thinking about organizations, I decided that maybe building an organization and creating that awareness and education for caregivers could be my life purpose. And that's how Caregiver Sathi came to be.
Ma'am, don't mind me asking this question. This one might sound silly. I wanted to know this personally. Caregiving is such an underrated topic. Very few people address. Can you tell me what is caregiving and tell us the importance of caregiving?
Absolutely. So let me tell you one of my favorite things, which is that there is a legendary anthropologist called Dr. Margaret Mead. And she was once asked this question as to what do you think is the first sign of civilization? And the person who asked this question was actually perhaps expecting that Margaret Mead will say, you know, the first sign of tools, of hunting or maybe handmade vessels. But what Margaret Mead said that the first sign of civilization in any culture is a healed femur bone, the thigh bone. And therefore, it means in the animal kingdom, if somebody broke their femur bone, it would mean sure shot death. Because the animal would not be able to be on their own long enough for the bone to heal. But if you found a healed femur bone, that meant that somebody else cared enough to take this other person who was injured, to bound up the wound and then help them through their recovery. That's caring. That's a sign of civilization or humanity. There are many ways in which each one of us is a caregiver. I believe that in all our roles, whether it is as children, whether it is as siblings, whether it is as friends, and certainly as parents, and as certainly as even as colleagues, the fundamental human connection is that of care. And we are who we are. There are the roles that we play. And we are caregivers. So caregiving can be defined as, or caregivers can be defined as, somebody who offers physical, mental, emotional, or financial care to another person who cannot do it by themselves. Now, in the case of illness or in the case of a chronic medical condition or any other life-limiting condition, we need others more than we need in our regular life. Now, you can say you and I are able-bodied and we don't need somebody, but that's not true. We need somebody for our mental, emotional, and social health. So frankly, we all need caregivers and we all are caregivers.
Wow, that is a very beautiful point, actually. I just now realized we all unknowingly are doing this, but we never tried to question ourselves on this topic. This is a very deep topic, I think.
Yes, because you know what? In our culture, and actually across all cultures, it is almost taken for granted. It's like, you know, it's a part of being in a society. It's a part of being in a family that you will look after each other. You will care for each other. So over a period of time, it has been taken for granted. Whereas it should not be taken for granted as well. Just like we strive to be, you know, to build our careers, just like we have ambition for building wealth, just like we have ambition for being, having hobbies, having families, I think it is equally important to care for not just your family members, but society. You know, like in the Sikh faith, it's very pronounced. It is said that, you know, you are a complete human being only if you think about those that have less than you. This is not just in the Sikh faith. Actually, it is in all faiths. It's just a question of us giving it attention.
Yeah, we like comparing ourselves with more than that we have, but we never see the people who dream to be wherever we are right now.
I know. Beautifully said.
Ma'am, it would be a lie if I tell you everything I am doing is selfless. I will definitely want to make myself show important in some point or a kind of show off, I can say. Not completely show off, but a kind of showing myself as important to the world. Can you tell me the right way to approach this self-care? Because most of the people think self-care as being selfish.
So self-care is a term that I think I personally encountered much later in my life, although it has been around for a long time. I think the concept and the idea has been around for a while in that unless we can nurture and nourish ourselves, unless we can be all of who we are, we really cannot be meaningful and significant and helpful to others. So in order to be a good caregiver, or in order to be somebody who can be sustainable and who can last, we have to have a healthy balance of not just caring for others, but simultaneously caring for ourselves. So if we are caregivers, we are caregivers not just to others, but to ourselves as well. So what does it mean to care for yourself? I think the first thing that it means to care for yourself is to understand yourself, to have a high degree of self-awareness, and that comes only over a period of time. To express yourself. So, for example, this is what I'm feeling. This is how I think about it. This is my perspective. And that can happen at any age. Even when my daughter was 3 years old, she was able to say this, that, Mama, but I don't think like this. From my point of view, it is like this. So I think to be able to express yourself with authenticity, saying, I have a difference of point of view, is also self-care. Now, this requires you to sometimes introspect, take time for yourself, think through what happened, feel through what has happened. So that is reflection or introspection. Or with the help of reflection, then decide, okay, I may have done this like this, but I would like to be either more of this or less of this. Or I would like to define my boundaries. So the idea of defining one's boundaries or understanding one's boundaries, at least in my case, I know that I didn't have the concept and understanding of my boundaries or even boundaries in general until very recently. I wish that when I was younger, I was 18, 19, 20. At that time, I understood what boundaries mean. What are my boundaries? And who would I like to be at this point in time? How can I take help? How can I be compassionate to myself? How can I invest time in my relationships? How can I take time out for things that I enjoy? Hobbies are not just leisure. Hobbies are our creative expression. And creative expression is absolutely essential, not just for you to have the leisure, but also to express yourself in the world. And it doesn't have to be a performing art like, you know, very high quality music or dance. It can even be something as everyday, like everyday cooking, like the way I keep my house, the kind of clothes I wear. And that's an expression of who I am. And having one's creative expression is a way of taking care of oneself, of giving voice to oneself. And only when we can replenish and rejuvenate ourselves, mm-hmm. which is through self-care, can we care for others. So if we have to be caregivers, the only way to provide long-term care is through self-care. Mm-hmm,
yeah.
You cannot pour from an empty cup. You have to fill your own cup.
Wow, that's a very beautiful point. How to tell someone, like you told, to express ourselves. While expressing ourselves, if we tell the truth to someone, how to make sure that it don't hurt that person in the process?
So that's a great question. Because just like I have my boundaries,
yeah,
right? The other person also has their boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes when I will express myself, it is possible that the other person can feel that was not my intention, or the other person can feel hurt, the other person can feel whatever.
Mm-hmm.
The idea is to find a balance in which you can help the other person articulate their intention, but at the same time, give dignity and respect to your intention. So if you have dignity and respect for the other person and yourself, then you can take care of saying, okay, here's an incident that happened. Here's how I felt about it. But what are we going to do about this in the future? Because I value our relationship, but this didn't go well for me. So how can I help you understand me better? And how can I understand you better? So that we can then avoid such a thing to happen in the future. So it's a question of respecting your own boundaries, recognizing the other person's boundaries, and arriving at a common ground and saying, okay, this experience has given us a learning. How can we move forward with that? Because even when we are hurt or we are affected, if we don't express it, then we are hurting ourselves over a long period of time. So in the fear of hurting the other person, if we do not prioritize ourselves, then resentments will build over a period of time. And that's not good either. So something called, one of my managers used to use this expression, when you are actually confronting someone, can you think of it not as confronting, but as carefronting?
Wow.
So can you meet the other person where that person is with care, as well as care for yourself?
I think by doing that, we are being true to the other person as well as ourselves.
And there is no guarantee that it will still go well.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? It can still go badly. Some people will still not take it. That's okay. We can make the best effort and we can make our best attempt. And sometimes it will not
go well.
Go well. And that's okay. We can just learn from it. Be compassionate to ourselves and say, okay, if this has not gone well, how can I learn from this and move forward?
Ma'am, I wanted to ask you that you took, you worked in so many different areas, which right now does not belong to wherever you are right now. But was that process worth it? Like, everyone are trying to figure out the purpose of their life. I want it today. Is it worth it to wait and give it some time? And
you know, it comes by practice. And I think that I have said this before. I believe. Do you know the concept of Ikigai?
Yes, ma'am.
So in Ikigai, it is that, you know, find that point of intersection of what you're good at, what you love, what the world wants, and what you can get paid for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
I don't think you can hit the sweet spot in one go. So there is no point in saying that, okay, I will do it once I have figured this out. Because I'm also a motorcycle rider, I believe that one should just go out on the journey and enjoy the journey. And getting to the destination is a part of the fun, but it is not all the fun. So there's no point in reaching your destination fast. That's no fun. You have to enjoy the journey. Second, the journey to the intersection of the four spaces that Ikigai speaks about, I think, is a spiral journey. So if you can visualize this, you actually, you know, figure out some sections. For a very long time, I knew the answer to three of those spaces. And I didn't know, I still don't know, how I can get paid for the work that I'm doing in Caregiver Sathi, for example. But I continue to go around this round and round and keep asking questions, keep exploring new areas, because hopefully when we go around it in a spiral journey, I will get to the center someday. My personal philosophy is to totally enjoy and love what I'm doing in that moment. It may not have any connection with what I'm going to, you know, what my singular purpose is. I'm not a person who has only one purpose. I equally enjoy my motorcycle riding. I equally enjoy my organization consulting. I equally enjoy building this organization, which is a social venture. I thoroughly enjoy being, I have a lot of difficulty also, but as a parent and my other roles in my life, but I try my best to enjoy all aspects of life, hopefully have a holistic life. I totally enjoy, for example, I have hobbies like crocheting and I enjoy them.
And you do it even if you are not paid for that, or even if it is because you are doing that for yourself.
Yes. I think that I spent my first few, you know, when I was younger, my consideration was, what can I get paid for more than anything else? So I chose a career in MBA.
Yeah.
Because I thought that being an MBA will get me a good salary and a good job. And that was important. And that is important to some extent, because I think having financial means allows you to do many things. But it should be in balance. So I feel that you can't get everything from one job. So you look at a job for something, you look at your hobbies for something else, you look at, you know, your volunteering efforts and the work that you do in society for something else. And then everything just comes together and, you know, you feel more wholesome at the end of it. But you can't expect everything to come to you from one source. I think that's not possible.
So it's worth taking everything or whatever you feel like doing.
Yeah. See, for some people, it works very well that you follow one idea and you do it very, very well. And that's why your self-awareness is important. If you are that person who can do one thing but do it very well, then that's your path. But you could be someone like me who gets very bored with doing just one thing. I cannot do just one thing. So it's very important for me to have more than one. So I think at the, you know, behind all of this is also the quality of your self-awareness. And there doesn't have to be one answer for everybody. My husband likes to do only one thing. He can do one thing. And that's good. That works for him. But I'm not that person. So I'm a different person. I like many things. So I do many things.
Ma'am, do you believe in law of attraction? And did this play something in your journey, like you believed in something and that become true to some extent?
I'm sure it played a role and it continues to. There are so many experiences that I've had where I would have thought, I wish, you know, something like this happens. Like even yesterday, I was very pleasantly surprised. Someone reached out to me and said, we would like to talk to you about the work that you're doing at Caregiver Sathi. How can we collaborate? Now, it was a wish that I had, but it wasn't coming true. And the universe seems to have conspired. I didn't reach out, but the other person reached out. And that has happened so many times.
Yeah, that's so amazing to, like, somewhere we think of something and even if we fail, that itself is coming to you in some extent. Ma'am, one of the most common question I got from Instagram, many students wanted me to ask you how to overcome and deal with anxiety attack. Like, we want to do a lot of things, but we feel a bit restless, and how to overcome that anxiety.
So that's a great question for someone like me, because the way that I usually introduce myself is that I'm a restless soul. I am never at peace, much to sometimes the frustration of people around me. Clearly, definitely my husband and my brother, they bear the brunt of it most. And I'm quite restless. It causes me a lot of anxiety. It happened yesterday evening. What my mentor, Raghu, has taught me and has become a practice over a period of time is what I'm going to share with you. There is a concept called the drishta in Yoga Sutras. And the idea...
Drishta.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's like being an observer to oneself. So you imagine that you are, when you are having that experience, that you're sitting in complete stillness. A lot of thoughts and a lot of emotions come and go. But can you watch it? Can you observe it? What is happening to you? What is it that you're feeling? And what all is triggering without judging it? Many times when, like, I had this extreme panic attack that I'm not doing well, I am being slow, etc., because something got triggered yesterday. And I then, as I was watching my feelings, I realized I was feeling angry with myself. I was feeling disappointed. I was feeling all of those things. And I was also feeling huge competitiveness, jealousy. I just sat with all my feelings. I made a note. I observed these feelings and just watched what was going on for me. So, you know, there are two parts to us. One of us is the actor, the one who is acting out in the world. But there is also the meditator within us, which is the observer. And if we can take the place of the meditator and observe ourselves, then we can watch everything that is going on with a sense of compassion for ourselves and allow...
Which is the real one, ma'am, out of those two, the meditator and the actor?
Both are us. And I think the ultimate goal is to be the actor and the meditator simultaneously. Mm-hmm. So we are doing something and simultaneously we are observing ourselves. Oh, this is what I'm doing. This is what's going on. So, for example, in this moment, I'm feeling anxious. I'm feeling angry. I'm feeling sad. And what am I going to do about it? Can I be nice and kind to myself? Can I express myself? Can I observe? So, you know, it takes practice, but one can get there, which is to be the actor and the meditator simultaneously. And I feel that that has helped me deal with my anxieties far more than I used to be able to.
Ma'am, in one of your podcasts, you told about a sense of urgency that you are feeling. Like, even sometimes I feel the same, that even I am in my 20s, I feel like I am running out of time to do so many things. Mm. What is that your sense of urgency that that is making you do everything you are doing?
Great question. I'm very impressed you have listened to my podcast. So thank you for that.
Yes, ma'am.
So, you know, this is, like I said, a part of self-care is our ability to reflect and our ability to think about what an incident has been.
Yes, ma'am.
My recent observation about myself is that maybe I have either inherited that restlessness, or I'm that person, or my circumstances have made me that person. One of the reasons that I can attribute to this is that, you know, I was about 25 when my dad passed away. And there are many people who lose their parents at that age and maybe even younger. But, and we make our own meanings about life depending on the experiences that we have. I think there was a part of me that made this meaning that I'm not going to live very long and that I'm running out of time. And that I must get a lot of things done because life is unpredictable. And, you know, my dad had lots of dreams and he wanted to do a lot, but his illness and life took him by surprise and a lot of dreams were unfulfilled. So I didn't want to be in the same place because life is unpredictable and, you know, life can come to an end anytime. I decided to make a list of all my childhood dreams and all the things that I wanted to do and say, I'm going to go after them irrespective and do everything I can. To my surprise, I'm 46 today and I have realized that it's not necessary that I will, you know, we don't know when I will die or not die. But I want to be a person who has a good idea of what I want to achieve. But it is equally important that whatever I pick up, I do it well. So while I'm restless, one of the prices that I had to pay for my restlessness was that I easily get distracted and I sometimes don't do a very good job in my restlessness. So I have to remind myself that not only is it important to get a lot done, it is equally important to do a good job of it. So when I remind myself of that, then I'm able to calm down and focus and get that which is in my hand at that point in time. So for example, right now, the only thing that is most important for me is that this podcast goes well. So if I can still my mind and be present here fully, it's quite hard for me given I'm so restless. But if I can be fully present here, then that's the best that I can do. And that's the way that I try to contain my restlessness and remind myself that I can move to the next important thing as soon as we are finished with this.
Yeah, this will definitely help me a lot because even I am somewhat similar to you that I focus on actions more than doing it perfectly or neatly. And end up doing so many things, but some things will lose its quality in the process.
Mm.
Ma'am, if you want to attribute all your success to one thing or one habit, what would that be?
So first of all, it's quite interesting. I don't think of myself as a very successful person. So that's the first problem. I think the one thing that I'm really proud of myself is my resilience and my perseverance. I don't give up easily. And I'm willing to fall down and get up and go again.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that I get from motorcycle riding, which is if you want to go to difficult mountainous rides, there is sure shot guarantee that you will fall down. You cannot be afraid of falling down. You have to believe that even if you fall down, you will get up and get back on track. And that is resilience. That is staying the course.
Ma'am, I heard some about that your motorcycle interest, which led you to winning Limca Book of Award. Can you tell me about that? How exactly did you understand that you love motorcycling and how you made that possible?
I didn't know I loved motorcycle riding for a very long time. So here's my story, and it is there in, Rashmi Bansal has written this book called Touch the Sky, Stories of Women Who Are Changing Their Destiny. And she has written that is about 15 women. And the last story is mine.
Wow.
And I'm very grateful to her for having, given me that kind of a platform. You know, when I was young and my father, who was an Air Force officer, for him, his scooter was very important. And he used to, it was a rite of passage. I think I would have felt like an adult if he gave me his scooter to ride. Now, to get the approval from him to get the scooter to ride was a long process, because I had to meet his quality standards. I should be able to kickstart the scooter. I should be able to maintain it, not get stranded, and so on and so forth. And my dad used to have a Bajaj Chetak, which is a little bit of a difficult ride as compared to Scooty, which came much later. I was quite proud when my father finally agreed and I had earned the license to ride his scooter. And I used to ride his scooter when I was in college. And I think it was a great help, because I could go for my NIIT classes, which were at another place, and my college, and not waste time in traveling via bus. So I thought that scooter riding was a matter of convenience. It was not necessarily something, at that point, I was very clear that it gave me a lot of joy. Then I went to XLRI, and in XLRI, the shops were very far, and there used to be some guys who used to have motorcycles, because they came, they had motorcycles and they were working earlier and all that. There used to be a big deal about being able to go to the market, and some of these guys would take, and there was a nice gender dynamic also, because the guys would, take the girls to the market. And my thing used to be that, I can go with one of these guys, but I would rather just you give me the motorcycle. Why do I need to sit behind you? I can ride my own motorcycle.
Yeah, this is amazing, actually. Because many people have a perspective that girls are just meant to sit at back, but you just proved everyone wrong that even they can ride, and even they are equally capable.
And actually, I have my parents to thank for that, because I never got this impression that just because I'm a girl, there are things I can't do. I was always made to believe that I can do anything that a boy can. And so I requested my classmates that, would you lend me your motorcycle? And now, any motorcyclist is not very happy lending their motorcycle.
Yeah, definitely.
But I was lucky to have a couple of friends who said, okay, you know, you can take our motorcycle. So I used to ride their motorcycle in XLRI Jamshedpur. And I can remember that on a few occasions when I was really stressed, riding the motorcycle actually gave me a sense of freedom, a sense of abandon, and a sense of joy that nothing else gave me. And that was that. And I didn't give it much attention. I didn't think I should buy myself a motorcycle, etc. But that was it. And then a few years later, my brother was going off for further studies, and I convinced him to give me his bike. And I had his bike, and I used to live in Hyderabad at that time. And I was one of the two women in the city of Hyderabad who used to ride a motorcycle. And that used to be fun. And, you know, sometimes the security guard of my office would ask me, "Madam, aapko bhari nahi lagta hai?" And I would say, "Nahi, mujhe bhari nahi lagta hai." So that was, but even then, it was never like, you know, oh, this is something that's my passion. So cut to many years later, I had now, you know, got a car, so you forgot about the motorcycle. And many years later, my husband and I were traveling to Goa, and we had hired a motorcycle. And then I just said to him that, you know, we can afford to have a motorcycle. You and I both like motorcycles, so let's get ourselves a motorcycle. So for my 39th birthday, he bought me a Royal Enfield Thunderbird. And
wow.
I said, okay, that'll be fun. And then I found out by this time there were many groups, and there was this group of women who ride motorcycles, and they got together. It's the Biker Knee. I joined that group and got to know some awesome women. And I realized that I'm not an oddball, and there are other women who enjoy motorcycle riding, and it's great to be a part of that group. Through that group, I got to know these six other women, and one of them decided to design this expedition to the highest motorable road, which is Mana Pass. And at that time, honestly, I didn't know what I was getting into. She said, "Do you want to go on this expedition?" I said, "Chalo." And I don't think I had the fitness or the experience, and we just went. And I think that experience was life-changing for me. And I am so glad that I had that experience. It truly taught me how to push the boundaries of my body and my mind. And in fact, the whole courage to do something like Caregiver Sathi comes from the fact that, you know, I believe that if you're a motorcyclist and you can take your motorcycle to the hills, then you can do anything. So we went, and I didn't know at that time that we would also be applying for the Limca Book of Records. And we applied, and it was the first time ever a group of women had gone to Mana Pass. And that gave us the record. Here we are.
Wow. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Ma'am, before I ask you the last question of the day, I want to ask you, how can people listening to this podcast get in touch with you?
It's quite easy to get in touch with me. You can get in touch with me over LinkedIn. I will be most happy. It gives me immense joy to coach and mentor youngsters. So LinkedIn is a good way. Otherwise, you can reach out to me over my email, which is bhavna.isar@sambhavna.com. And that is bhavna.isar@sambhavna.com. And I am also present on almost all social media platforms. So a good way to professionally get in touch with me is through LinkedIn or email. But happy to connect on Twitter as well.
That brings us to the last question of the day. Ma'am, I want you to imagine that tomorrow, all of a sudden, you are invited to the biggest That stadium is biggest because people from all over the country and students from all over the country are there to listen to your talk. And you are giving a 1 minute talk to the youngsters and everyone who are listening to you. What is that one thing you want to share with everyone or one message that you want to get heard out for generations to come?
Wow. I like that video very much. I hope that I get such an opportunity someday. But
for the work you are doing right now, you will definitely get that one day.
All right.
Mark my words.
All right. So I'm getting a little emotional, but let's just say this. I think that one of the things that I would like to tell as many people that I can tell is that believe in yourself and believe that you are special and that you have a purpose and you have a meaning and that your story is absolutely important. It may or may not feel unique, and that doesn't matter. You, because you have lived your life, will feel like there is no big deal about it. But you are unique and you are special and your voice matters. So give your voice as much amplification as you can and make yourself heard. Make yourself heard for not just yourself, but for the many others who may not have discovered their voice. So, oh God, this is making me so emotional. I think that's the only important thing. That's the real purpose. That's the reason that we have been put here. If we can make ourselves seen and heard, and if we can make sure that those who are not as fortunate as us can be seen and heard, then we have lived a life of meaning. And I wish that all of us figure that meaning for us and live a life of meaning.
Wow, that was so so deep, ma'am. Even I was able to, deep in my soul, able to relate to what you just said. And it is so important to do that.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for being on this show, ma'am. It means a lot that you took your time from your busy schedule and came here to share your wisdom on our podcast.
Thank you so much for giving me this opportunity. And I hear that you're doing good work and that there are lots of people in the, you know, the youngsters who may need some of the support. And I'm more than happy to provide whatever I can in terms of perspective and learning my life experience. Happy to share. Thank you for giving me this platform and happy to have the feedback. Look forward to hear from many who are your audience and all the very best to you.
Thank you so much, ma'am. I hope you learned and enjoyed this conversation with Bhavana Issar. If you learned something new or got inspiration, make sure you share this with your friends on Instagram, Facebook, WhatsApp, or whatever social media platform you use. Tag me at @IamTheBrandMyself and let your friends know these amazing insights and let all be inspired by Bhavana's success journey. And finally, as Bhavana said, do something that you personally feel good about. Also, if you want to work with Caregiver Sati, do check out her page, which I will provide you in the show notes section of this podcast. Now it's time to go out there and do something inspiring.